Karankawa, it's 1993 and you haven't died yet. In fact, you have a little bit of time, about a decade. I know we are getting closer to you when we follow the road as it curves, like when the lower back meets the ass. The concrete musculature of Lake Jackson, a city built on the bones of the Karankawa, who drank the hurricane's maroons, escaped from their enemies' aortas like a Bud Light. The sound of an aluminum can crushed against the forehead. A metal sign announces itself. Population 25,357. We are getting closer to your house, one of hair and braids, where I learned the shame that accompanies pissing on myself, tying a sweater around my waist to hide the wet continent stretching itself out on the back of my shorts. Another shame was womanhood. If it wasn't piss, it was the bloody blossoms saturating the garden of my pubis. The bougainvillea gripped the wooden fence outside while I had my first kiss 100 times, and I chewed each bottom lip like a cigarette butt. Those times I sat on the floor between your knees while you coaxed my hair into careful plaits, all things rattling their grief in the kitchen.
Ileana, you're already something of a poetry superstar. This is your first collection, not to put the pressure on, but I'm looking forward to the follow-up act because you've had a wonderful debut here. You've already started with an award, the Donald Hall Prize for Poetry. Some may know it as the AWP Prize. Tell us a little bit about this prize and how that all came about.
Beginning writers really depend on these book prizes for us to kind of break out into the market. And so I think I had had this collection out in contest for about a year. And I didn't even know that I was a finalist for this prize. And I was actually getting ready for work. And I got a phone call from Sapria at AWP. And she was like, "Are you driving?" And I was like, "No, I'm not driving. I'm good. I was just at home." And so she was like, "Well, you won the Donald Hall Prize." And, you know, when you encounter like such a shock, you kind of temporarily go deaf. So I wasn't really sure what exactly I was trying to process information, because I didn't even know that I had been a finalist. So I wasn't prepared at all for that kind of news.
But that's wonderful news. That is wonderful. And tell us about the name of the collection, because I think a lot of people, and that's maybe why you chose it, Karankawa. Am I pronouncing it correctly?
Karankawa.
Karankawa. Yeah. Tell us what that is.
The Karankawa Indians lived in the region of Texas where I grew up. And the impetus for the collection was the passing of my aunt. And she lived also in that area of South Texas. So I started to do a little bit of research about them, and one of the things I noticed is that they had been kind of subjected to these false myths, so people kind of felt it was appropriate to go in and fill those gaps in their history. So then I started to think about, you know, significant births and deaths in my family, and I was a little bit suspicious of the grand narratives that I'd been handed down. So I thought about going back and reconfiguring those or revising those according to my personal experience in my family.
And that's what I've read about the book, too. It's how we reconstruct our personal histories, which is intriguing when you think about it. Do we get to reconstruct them, or is that the privilege of a poet?
That's definitely the privilege of a poet, and also memory. You know, for me, memory isn't always accurate. And I do have a line in the book that says, one of the speakers says, "I recall truths and not accuracies." So it's a privilege of being a writer, but it's also a privilege of looking back at memory.
You're absolutely right. We've talked on this show with others about memoirs, and memory is very, very faulty.
Yeah.
You know, different perspectives. So you get to recreate all of these. And there's a certain kind of a repetition here, the passage of dying, coming out, transforming, being born, poems in each section of the book about grief. Is there a certain pattern that you wanted to have here?
Ordering the collection is actually pretty difficult because I wasn't sure if I wanted a narrative arc. I wasn't sure if I wanted each section to have its own kind of thematic evolution. So I really thought about you know, how the poems in the collection spoke to each other and, you know, what poems would I need to come first for the ones at the end to have more of a voice or yeah. to highlight or illuminate themes more effectively. So ultimately, I wanted to establish some of the forms early in the poems, and I wanted to establish the creation myths early. That way they could, again, be in conversation with each other throughout the collection.
And you've worked on this for 10 years?
Yeah. Well, my aunt passed in 2006, so that's kind of when I started thinking about this project. So, some of the poems are pretty old, and they feel a lot different, and they embody a different spirit than some of the newer ones that I've written. And I, you know, looking at it, I can tell which ones are older and which ones are kind of looking toward a new poetry that I'm working on currently.
Are you able to leave those older ones alone and not rewrite them?
Yeah. At some point, you just have to stop tinkering with it. But I think one of the things that's newer about the current poems is this kind of idea going back to mythology and memory is modern day mythical figures that are in my life. And an example of that are drag queens and also, you know, subjects like Kid Cudi and Kanye West who embody a very pop culture contemporary status.
So can you tell us a little bit more? I'm intrigued still by the Karankawa.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us a little bit more about these Native Americans and how you learned about them.
I've learned about them in school. We have to take Texas history. And I think one of the things that I've always remembered about them was that they were characterized as being very brutal, very violent. And that's kind of where the imagery in the title poem comes about how they would drink the blood from their enemies' hearts. And then when I started to research them, I realized that wasn't true at all. They were actually very peaceful people and nomadic people. But again, when you have those like gaps in mythology or in history, there's kind of this need or an instinct to kind of fill that in. And a lot of times those stories become dramatized or maybe a little bit insincere to the actual history of the people.
We've probably done that to many Native American tribes, assumed the worst and filled in with the worst.
Right.
So you're also part of the March 2016 Poets in Print, along with David Dodd Lee. Tell us about that. That's coming up in spring.
A good friend of mine, Michael Marbury, actually runs the Poets in Print series. And this is something that's been going on for many years in Kalamazoo. And he asked me to participate in March because at the time he asked me, I didn't know when the book was coming out. So we're like, okay, let's just be on the safe side and do March. So it's going to be my first reading in Kalamazoo since the collection has debuted. So I'm really excited, but I'm also going to be really nervous.
No need to be. and also, one of my favorite poets, Dorian Lowe, Best New Poets 2014, she chose one of your poems.
Yeah.
Tell us a little more about that.
You know, I have to say 2014 was just such an amazing year for me professionally. And, you know, I got notified during the summer that I had been chosen for Best New Poets, and I'm such a fan of the series. And if you look at the anthology, like the poems in there are just so amazing. And so I'm so thankful to them for featuring me. And then maybe a month later, I found out about the AWP Award, and I was told that Joy Harjo chose the collection, and I had been a fan of hers for many years. So to hear that something about my work resonated with her was just, it was just planetary. I think that's the only way I can describe it. So 2014 was a planetary year for me.
But, you know, isn't there something in mythology or maybe it has a Christian basis that things come in threes?
So I'm waiting for my third.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. Talk to me about the cover. This cover is just phenomenal. It's extremely colorful. And when I look at this, is it just me, but is that Betty Boop?
It is Betty Boop. I actually had an original idea for the book that I won't tell you because looking back, it was so terrible and very cliche. But Nancy Imers, who I work with here at Western, she was like, you know what, that is going to give off the wrong impression of your book. Why don't you go back and look through images and see which ones speak to you? So I was actually kind of on Google Images, and I stumbled across this artist on Etsy who takes these kind of iconic figures but repaints them with traditional, in this case, it's Dia de los Muertos makeup, so in design. And I thought it was interesting because a lot of the themes that the speakers deal with in the book are about identity. So how to exist in that little hyphenated space between being Mexican American, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought, you know, this was like the perfect embodiment of kind of Western American traditions kind of enmeshed with, you know, the Mexican culture that's so part of, you know, the collection.
Absolutely. I think it's a wonderful choice. So talk to me about the journey that you've taken. How did you get interested in poetry? When did all of this begin for you? Did you have family members or friends who inspired you to enjoy poetry? Or
family has always been just encouraging me to read and thought that education was so important. And, you know, as a teenager, a very moody teenager.
Aren't they all?
I had always kind of felt othered. So I turned to poetry because poetry to me is an other. So it felt kind of natural for me to kind of gravitate toward, you know, toward the genre. And, you know, along with that came the weird goth phase. So I had in high school, I had my poetry and I had my goth music. And I felt that I had found my home in essence.
Is there goth poetry in your past?
I'm sure there is in a notebook in my parents' house, and we will not be excavating that and resurfacing that.
Make sure you burn it. Somebody yeah. will. So, and then you came to Western. How'd you find your way to Kalamazoo?
That's a good question. Well, I had lived in Houston, and then I had moved to Arizona to do my master's work. And I was researching schools, and I looked at Western's program, and I looked at, you know, Bill and Nancy, and the success the program has had, and I knew that I wanted to apply, and I'm just so thankful that I was selected to join this group of amazing, amazing writers.
And you're working on your PhD now?
I am. I just entered my fourth year, and if all goes well, knock on wood, I should be graduating in April.
And then you're looking for a full-time job in poetry. How does that happen?
It happens. And there's actually a few really amazing competitive jobs out there right now for poetry. And I've actually been working on all of my application materials, which is also kind of a tedious but exciting process. And I'm trying to just find a place that speaks to me and where I feel I can do the most good for the students, because I love teaching, and I'm teaching advanced poetry right now. And you know, to be able to be in a program where I have the time to write and to be able to teach poetry and to make something like my book possible is just, it's unreal.
So you're aiming at teaching at a higher education level?
Yeah, ideally.
Any mentors or anybody you want to call out and somebody who gave you that extra push?
Oh, I just have so many. I think, you know, I have to acknowledge Bill and Nancy because they had seen earlier versions of my book, and they really did help me hone this collection into what it is. And then I have a lot of mentors at Arizona State University. I worked with Norman Duby and Becky and Fritz Goldberg and Alberto Rios and Janine Savard really closely, you know, with my poetry. So it's hard to just name one person because this is just such a community involvement. It's not just me writing these poems in isolation. It really is a group project, a collaborative project. Some other people that have pushed me, you know, all my life, especially in supporting of my writing, has been my family. And, you know, this collection wouldn't exist, you know, had I not had all of these amazing stories that my family has handed down to me, and our tradition of spirituality that is different than anything I've ever come across. A tradition of mystery, a tradition of omission and silence. So I think, you know, and also this idea of my father's levity. I feel like, you know, in the book, there are places that humor is able to come through. And I think that is because of him. So if I had to add anything about who's helped me or who's pushed me or who's inspired me, it's most definitely my family.
How do they respond to the award?
They were so excited. And my dad kind of, you know, told my partner, because my partner lives in Texas, so they talk a lot. And he was like, I don't really know what the hell she won, but I think it's good. So, I mean, they don't quite understand what it means to be a writer, but they do understand that they do understand my accomplishments.
And what is that core message or emotion or image that you want your reader to get from this collection?
Oh, that's a hard question. I think, you know, I wanted think about this idea of home and this idea of identity and memory. I think those are really important themes to the collection. And, you know, the speaker in these poems struggles with those ideas and struggles with identity. And that's why, you know, transformation is such an important action in the collection. So I think overall, having a thinking about modern day myth making and how we create and construct our own myths out of compelling personal experience.
Well, thank you for coming in to talk with us, Ileana.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.